Hi, thanks for tuning in to season 5 of the Aced It podcast, where we translate science into sense so you can learn about research in the justice and health fields without having to read a lengthy journal article or report. This season, we're trying something new. Interviews. In each episode, you'll hear from top experts working on research within the JCoin network. I'm so excited. It's like you get a glimpse behind the scenes with these fascinating folks as they talk about what they're learning, the struggles they faced in their projects, and what amazing findings they have so far. Findings that will surely make a difference in the lives of so many. It's almost too good to be true. So with that, I'm Danielle Rudes, your host, coming to you from Sam Houston State University in Texas. With ACID, I do most of the work for you. All you have to do is listen. ACID is a cool and super helpful product brought to you by the Center for Advancing Correctional Excellence, ACE, at George Mason University. For more info, check out jcoinctc.org. Now, let's get started. Hey, thank you for joining us today. It is my extreme honor and privilege to spend a few minutes today with the spectacular Catherine Elkington, or I call her Kate. Kate is the director for the Center for Behavioral Health and Youth Justice and a professor of medical psychiatry in psychiatry at Columbia University in New York. She is one of the leads of one of our awesome JCoin hubs. Thank you so much, Kate, for joining us today. I will ask you to begin by also providing a quick introduction to yourself and your team. I want to make sure that I didn't miss anything important.
Hello, my name is Kate Elkington, and I am a clinical psychologist and also professor of clinical psychology in the Department of Psychiatry at Columbia University and the New York State Psychiatric Institute. I am part of an amazing JCoin hub here at Columbia University in NISBE. This hub is one of the few in the JCoin, or the only one actually in the JCoin network to focus on the court system, and offers a really unique opportunity to examine the role courts can play in increasing access to medications for opioid use disorder, or MOUD.
Okay, thank you so much for that, Kate. Why did your team decide to focus on courts for your JCoin project?
Courts are well positioned to identify and importantly link to treatment those with opioid use disorder and related problems. And as such, the development of novel approaches beyond the typical treatment court design are necessary to address the seemingly recalcitrant issue of opioid misuse among participants in the justice system. Following a spate of overdoses among court participants, the New York State Unified Court System launched the first opioid intervention court in 2016. The goal of this treatment court was to address the unique needs of defendants with opioid misuse by getting them into treatment and stabilized as fast as possible. That meant, among other things, identifying individuals at risk of overdose and quickly getting them to treatment. As a result, the opioid intervention court model was developed. And it has several unique attributes that set it apart from traditional drug treatment courts. First, the opioid court enrolls people into the court before entering a plea, also known as pre-plea, and temporarily suspends the prosecution of the individual's case while they are entered and completing the opioid court program, which is typically about 90 days. There's also a priority placed on rapidly screening for and providing access to life-saving MOUD. And because participation is voluntary, failure to complete the program does not hold any legal penalty. Each person ideally participates in the opioid court for about 3 months, and then after that, they transition to other services as necessary. Legal charges may be dismissed after a person completes the recommended intervention. The initial evaluation of the opioid court model in Buffalo, New York, showed improvements in MOUD access and initiation, as well as reduced risk of overdose in opioid court participants compared to participants with other dispositions. And as such, the unified court system in New York State embarked upon a statewide rollout of this new court model. The initial evaluation of the opioid court model in Buffalo showed improvements in access and initiation of medications for opioid use disorder, such as buprenorphine and naltrexone, as well as a reduced risk of overdose compared to participants who had received other dispositions. And as a result, the unified court system in New York State embarked upon a statewide rollout of this new model. However, scaling up innovations such as new court models can be challenging, in part due to the differences in context that the new court model will be delivered as compared to where it was originally developed and tested. So the aims of our JCoin project are largely twofold. First, we wanted to develop an implementation intervention that would guide the support and scale-up of the new innovative opioid court model. Project Opioid Court Reach, or rigorous and evidence-based approaches for court-based health promotion, was born. Second, we wanted to test if the intervention was effective in two ways. First, was it effective in scaling up the new court model with an eye towards the court being delivered with rigor and fidelity to the original model that was rolled out in Buffalo and that we know to be efficacious, but also permit flexibility given the differences in context that the new model was now being delivered? And secondly, did the intervention support courts that were able to achieve improvements in outcomes with respect to treatment linkage, MOUD initiation, court completion, and reduced recidivism as compared with the standard of care, which in this case were the traditional drug courts? And in process, we are gathering a lot of information at the staff and systems level, so the court and the treatment systems, that will help us understand if the intervention works or if it doesn't, why or why not.
Wow, this work is fascinating and so vitally important. How did you go about answering your specific research questions in this project?
Well, we pulled together a multidisciplinary team with expertise in implementation science, medications for opioid use disorder and addiction psychiatry, generally speaking, treatment provision and treatment courts, and we partnered with 10 counties in New York State who had either just started their opioid court or were about to start. All were very interested in receiving the support to launch and build their courts through this JCoin project. We then developed our implementation intervention that hinges on two key strategies. First, we use a local interagency change team. And second, we use external facilitation to guide and coach the change team into making practice change for the court. The local change team is the court stakeholder group, which comprises the county opioid court judge, prosecution and defense, the court coordinator and case manager, as well as providers and peers from that county who work together to develop the new court. The external facilitation is led by our partners at the Center for Justice Initiatives, who have a very long history of providing technical assistance to New York State treatment courts. Together, the technical assistance team work with and in support of the stakeholder group as they begin the process of developing and improving the opioid court. The approach is guided by Aaron's EPIS framework, or Exploration, Preparation, Implementation, and Sustainment framework. And within each phase of this framework, there are associated implementation activities. So during the exploration phase, the first phase, the technical assistance team conducts a needs assessment, interviewing all stakeholders and determines the current state of affairs, so to speak, in order to determine potential ways forward for the court to either develop or improve current practices. Then in the preparation phase, the stakeholder group and the technical assistance team work to create an action plan and implement new or improved practices to support this new opioid court model. And once the plan is complete and the court is rolling out its new practices, we are then capturing their data from the court's administrative data system. This data is then fed back to the stakeholder group in a series of quarterly reports so that the stakeholder group can see where as a court they are succeeding and where there might be opportunities for further refinement of current practices. We use the opioid care cascade as well as the 10 essential elements of the opioid court, and these elements are akin to best practice standards that are utilized in drug courts, to frame the data and the court's progress so that the stakeholder group can examine how well they are implementing the opioid court model and how well the court participants are doing by way of treatment initiation, MOUD initiation in particular, retention in treatment, and court completion. The technical assistance team continue to work with the stakeholder group as they identify one or two areas that they want to improve upon based on these feedback reports. These activities make up the implementation phase, and then in the sustainment phase, which we have not yet got to, we will then provide reports, but are looking to see if the stakeholder group is able to work more independently without the hands-on facilitation provided by the technical assistance team.
Oh my gosh, this all sounds so comprehensive and I'm just overwhelmed. I am in utter awe of the work that your group is doing in these New York courts. I don't want to get us off topic, but I want to switch focus just for a second, though, and ask you, what, if anything, changed in your project because of COVID?
I think it would be easier to answer what didn't change since COVID, honestly. And for this project, there have been two things that have happened very close in time that have influenced the implementation of the opioid court model in somewhat lasting ways. And these are both very difficult to disentangle. The first was the elimination of non-cash bail in New York State that went into effect in January of 2020, which was closely followed in March of 2020 by COVID-19 when the world stopped, including the courts. So a bit of context around non-cash bail in New York State and what it means for the opioid court. Over the past few decades, the rapid increase in mass incarceration, fueled in large part due to drug arrests, created a scenario in which expenditures for criminal justice rose from about 74% between 1990 and 2014. Faced with limited resources, many municipalities began assessing fees and fines to those arrested for low-level offenses or as an alternative to incarceration strategy for minor crimes such as misdemeanors. However, many individuals at this time who were arrested lacked the means to post bail and pay these fees or fines, and as such, ended up spending long times in custody while they awaited trial. Recognizing the disproportionate impact of levying fines, fees, and bail payment on poor people and people of color, and the relative inefficiency of trying to collect money from those with limited means, many states have developed strategies designed to provide more equitable results and reduce inappropriate confinement for those individuals who have committed low-level offenses and who lack the resources to pay fines, fees, or post bail. This is the case in New York State. And in 2020, New York State eliminated no cash bail. However, one of the unintended consequences of bail reform has resulted in lower incarceration rates for individuals arrested for several different kinds of offenses. And for many individuals, the appeal of going to the opioid court to avoid custody while awaiting trial is removed. In several jurisdictions, the number of people enrolled in opioid court programs has dropped sustainably, as well as drug court and other treatment courts. The drop in enrollment has thus had a knock-on effect, whereby lower numbers make requests for additional staff or support services very difficult. Layer on top of that, the impact of COVID-19. This had immediate and also long-term impacts on court function. First, as with the rest of the world, the court shut down and then reopened, but from a fully remote posture. And this posed challenges to working with opioid court participants, both with respect to technology access for these participants, as well as continued engagement of participants in treatment and the court program. At the time, this was exacerbated by limited capacity of community providers to accept new clients due to their own restrictions imposed by COVID-19. Nonetheless, following return to usual functioning, reduction in arrests continued, and it led to decrease in opportunities for individuals to appear in opioid court and avail themselves of whatever available treatment services were still operational. But also workforce challenges that have been seen in most sectors since COVID have been present in the criminal legal and treatment systems, with turnover and open positions making work in this space and the implementation of new initiatives challenging. The work of the project, until recently, had been entirely remote, and this was not the original plan, and it's limited our ability to connect with and engage with court stakeholder groups and increase buy-in around implementing a new court model with almost no resources offered by New York State.
Thank you so much for providing all of that very important context. It certainly has been challenging for your team. It seems that COVID left no one untouched or unaffected. Can I also ask you please to discuss some of your most recent or your most interesting findings so far?
We are still in the midst of study data collection, and so emerging findings have been more related to the process of the court model rather than its outcomes. It has been clear that the opioid court model fills a critical gap in the criminal legal continuum, where individuals with opioid use problems who appear at arraignment may be able to very quickly move themselves into treatment, and this includes access to MOUD.
I think you're going to get to this, but I want you to tell me a little bit more about the importance of the partnerships in your study. They just sound to me like the study can't go on without them.
We have found that the partnership between county treatment providers and the courts is incredibly important for the success of this court model. But also, given the recent changes in the legal landscape, the partnerships between the courts and more upstream partners, including law enforcement and pretrial services, are equally important in order to identify potential court participants early on and facilitate their rapid entry into the court and thus into treatment. We've also seen lower than anticipated initiation of MOUD among court participants, despite successful link to treatment. We are in the process of understanding this shortfall, so to speak, in order to determine additional points of intervention around starting MOUD.
Kate, thank you so much, both for your really important work and for sharing it with our podcast listeners today. All the very best to you as you continue your project. And I just know these courts and what you're learning will have a profound impact on many individuals, families, communities who are struggling with substance use disorder or opioid use disorder. Your work may provide just the hope that is needed. Thank you so much, Kate.
Thank you very much, Danielle, for having me on. And I'd also like to thank our partners at NIDA, Tisha Wiley, Laurie Ducharme, and Carrie Mulford, as well as all the amazing investigators, as I noted earlier, who are part of the NISPE Columbia University Hub. Thank you.
That wraps another episode of the ACEDIT podcast. We thank you for listening to ACEDIT, where we translate science into sense. Also, remember, you can find one-page summary overviews written in plain language for all of the research we cover on this podcast on our website, jcoinctc.org. Our conveniently packaged research summaries may help you remember what you heard here, and they will help you translate this research to your staff, friends, students, or colleagues. ACEDIT is part of the NIDA-funded Justice Community Opioid Innovation Network, or JCOIN, through the Coordination and Translation Center, CTC, housed at the Center for Advancing Correctional Excellence, ACE, at George Mason University. Tune in again for more science and more sense with ACEDIT.